Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you joined us. Well, today is Friday. We made it to the end of yet another week. Lots of controversial news on television, some of which we discussed on the show. Some good stuff, though, too. I feel as though there's some major strides taking place in the world of cancer. I've made it my business the last few years. I mean, I had a lot to do with cancer in my tenure at the Institute, and having my mother, my brother, my sister all succumb to cancer, and my in-laws as well. So it's not like cancer hasn't been a part of my life for many, many years. But you get mixed emotions when something works or when something doesn't work, and it alters your opinion of things. Personal opinions, you know, are how they affect you. So even if you look at something and you can see statistics and they all look like they're going in the right direction, if that's not the way it worked for you personally, you have trouble believing or trusting in something unless it happens in that positive direction for you. I hope that makes sense to everybody. I feel like after years and years and years and years, and I don't really know how many, but certainly as long as I've been alive, there has been studies of cancer. And still out there today, I believe cancer is up there with one of the most, I don't know, horrendous rates of recovery. Albeit now I've read, even on the show, statistics where Western medicine has brought it to an all-time high. But because it's what it is, it changes to survive, like all of us. So we did talk about some sad stuff this week, but the reason I brought up cancer is because this whole week, Joan London, who was a media person on TV a lot in years gone by, she's on the Today Show this whole week talking about surviving breast cancer. And it's a very uplifting program, a very uplifting interview with Joan on several occasions. She talks very honestly. She has video of her during her journey. I think it's worthwhile for people who are in that struggle in the moment to see things like that. I would suggest that if you didn't get to watch the Today Show this week, I don't know if Joan will be there after today, but certainly you could Google her and get her story online. It may be good for your sense of well-being. So let's bring Shelley in because we have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Ebola that we talked about yesterday. So it's not getting better. Shell?
Rain.
There you are. I kept circling like it was working to let you in.
Good morning. Huh? Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, very interesting week with a lot of the topics we talked about, and so yeah, it's been quite an interesting week. One thing I will say though, I'm glad you were talking about cancer, and I love to hear people talk about their recovery from cancer, whether it was through natural methods or Western medicine, or a combination of the both, because it just proves to people that it can be done. You and I both know people who have recovered from cancer and remain cancer-free literally for decades. And then, you know, everybody knows people that didn't have that kind of success. So the fact, if one person can do it, and you and I certainly know more than one person, that means it can be done. But the one thing I will say is that one of the things that bothers me about all the telethons and about the walks for cancer and walks for diabetes and walks for all these diseases is that there is so much research being done on what causes these diseases, and yet the cause has been known for many, almost 80 years now. Dr. Otto Heinrich Warburg, brilliant, he actually won a Nobel Peace Prize for this, discovered that the root cause of cancer was a condition-caused acidosis. That's when your internal blood chemistry becomes acidic instead of alkaline. We're supposed to have an alkaline basis to our body. I think 7-point-something is supposed to be our alkaline reading, and most people aren't. Most people are way under that, and what causes it is stress, bad food, drinking too much, smoking cigarettes, you know, all these things that we know aren't healthy for us.
Right.
And that's the reason why cancer shows up in different spots on people. Why do some people get pancreatic cancer? Why do people get stomach cancer? Why do people get leukemia, which is blood cancer, you know, is based on their heredity, the internal strength of their particular body, and the emotional, believe it or not, the emotional stress that brought it about. It'll manifest in different organs of the body because of all of our different bodies vibrate differently. I don't know why modern medicine rejects that and why they haven't ran with it to act as more of a preventative to prevent cancer, except to say that chemotherapy is a multi-billion dollar industry. And so it seems like a lot of these things, I mean, this man in 1931, think of the year, in 1931 was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in medicine for this important discovery. And why our Western medicine hasn't ran with that is astonishing to me, because chemotherapy does nothing to address the acidosis of the body. If anything, it causes more acidity. So, all diseases are caused from this condition. Diabetes is just strictly acidosis of the pancreas. When the pancreas becomes too acidic because of poor food choices, diabetes will occur. That's why people can go on a raw food diet, although it's hard to maintain, but they can go on a raw food diet and their diabetes goes into check. My sister's ex-husband would flip in and out of being diagnosed with diabetes because my sister kept starting to feed him better, feed him more, you know, more natural. Even had him go vegetarian for a short time when he was really, really sick. Something really bad happened to his foot, and it became infected. So she forced him to go vegetarian, and his diabetic numbers balanced out during the time she was treating his foot. So it's been proven to me over and over and over again that our eating choices are so important, and that a lot of conditions people think are incurable are not. They just have to be managed. Everybody has cancer cells in them. Everybody has the potential to become diabetic in them based on what we expose the body to. So I just wanted to start.
Well, I think the answer to that, though, honey, is, and it makes me sad and mad to say it, is when you talk about what we can do for ourselves to keep ourselves healthy. We don't, is the truth. We don't. I mean, some of us go in spurts, and some of us take amazing care of ourselves. But every time I've ever met anybody who practices something that they know is good for them, people that work out all the time, people that going to the gym every morning is a bigger deal than going to work. It depends too much on the individual. So there has to be the medicines and the pills and the other things, because most of us won't stay dedicated. I know that sounds sad and not very highly speaking of human nature, but it's really the truth. We both know that. You and I both believe it completely.
Well, I'm
really
not so sure about that. There's a good percentage of society that are just lazy. I mean, I'm not saying that as an insult, but if you know that your life choices are bringing about illness and suffering for you, then, you know, to not do something to change that, I can't wrap my brain around, to be honest with you. But I think that most people don't make better choices because they don't have the right information to make better choices. And the reason I say that is because I was a meat eater for 40 years because I believed becoming vegetarian was an unhealthy choice. If I had made the choice earlier in life, I would have suffered less. But I suffered tremendously from the time I was 6 years old till I was in my late 30s because I thought I was making really, really good choices. And I was very health conscious. And it turned out that my choices weren't. And that was because of misinformation I was being given by people that I thought were an authority and should have known to give me the right information. I wasn't warned about side effects of drugs I was being given. I wasn't given the right advice about, you know, proper diet and things like that. I had to teach myself. So that's why I'm such an advocate for people looking into more natural ways of healing their body. You know, even if you don't want to become a raw foodist for two and a half years like I did or something like that, you can still maintain your lifestyle. You can still maintain being a meat eater. But if you're having health issues, try organic meats. If you're having health issues, try walking 20 minutes a day. There's little things people can do. They don't have to change their entire lifestyle. I did. I mean, I completely changed everything in under a 2.5 year period of time. I'm not advocating everybody has to do that. But if people knew that small changes could make such a big difference, I think they might try it. But there's so much misinformation out there and hype. Unfortunately, that's why I try not to put hype onto it. I try to make it a more relaxed recommendation, because then maybe somebody will try it if they don't think there's so much. Well, hype is a good word too. There's not, you know, no hype around it. It's just it is what it is. If you make little changes, better changes, you can literally over a period of time just alter your whole mental and physical health by taking little steps.
I don't doubt that. And I do believe that. And I do know many people that do things that are better for them once they are educated and learn things. In the time at the Institute, I would watch people be return guests. And the first time they'd leave, all they maybe gave up was coffee or Diet Coke. Then we wouldn't see them for several months. And then when they came back the next time, the next thing they'd give up would be beef. And, it is a journey. What I'm talking about is when you have somebody, and you've already said all of this, heredity has a lot to do with things like cancer and lifestyle, the lifestyle that you grow up in that is your life. Then most people, even though they will attempt to do some of the other things, the smart things, because it's out there all the time for people to see. It's talked about on TV. It's talked about there. Go through the cable channels at night. 70% of what's on TV at night is about juicing and lifestyle and exercise and all the things that we know are better for us. All these gurus who've brought themselves to a different level of lifestyle are there selling their wares and explaining to you how much healthier you can be. And I do think people get excited about that and take the power back and do it. But if they walk in, my Michael, he thought all that was wrong with him was something that happened to him when he was 13 years old. He had no idea that there was a tumor in his throat. That's what was obstructing his breathing. And all the scans that they did didn't show it. So until he went in to have the surgery to repair that obstruction, he didn't know cancer was there. Now he's turned his life around, and he had a scan this week, or actually 2 weeks ago, but he was at the doctor's yesterday. And according to the scan, everything looks clean, everything looks healthy, everything looks pink, but there's still microscopic cancer cells.
Right.
And that's
normal, by the way.
Yes, that's normal, but it's not good for somebody who's already had intricate surgery like that and air has been to it and all of the things that we know will aid and abet those cancer cells. So the doctors still want him to do radiation. I thank God, and he's not 13 anymore. I don't have to make that decision because that would be a hard decision for me to try to make. So he's still thinking about it. But my point is that all these things that can bring us to a better place, to if we know mom and dad both got cancer and you're 14, that's when somebody should be talking to you. That's when somebody should be saying to you, look, I don't want to scare you or anything, but here's the deal. Traditionally, if your parents, your birth parents, have had these issues, the likelihood of you having these issues is dominant. So then changing your lifestyle is the perfect answer. And I also feel at this point in time for my son, Michael, that if he does make the decision to do some radiation, he's the perfect candidate because now he has stayed so pure for the last 3 weeks. His color, the doctor couldn't get over how good he looks, how good his labs are, all that kind of stuff. So if he has to have it, now he's in the perfect place.
Right, right.
But it is, I mean, just like Joan London. She's in good shape. She's a beautiful woman. She still looks like she's in her 40s, and she isn't. And she survived beautifully with all the poisons that they gave her to kill the cancer. And it has to be a personal decision. But I'm afraid, what I said in the very beginning, is too many of us know what we should be doing and don't. And whether it's laziness or just inconvenience, or we have excuses for all of it. I know, because I believe in it and still don't do it. I know. And I get it, and I still don't do it. I try. I have weeks when I'm really good, and then I have weeks when I, you know, do whatever I feel like doing because I feel like I deserve it. So we make excuses to ourselves to do whatever we want to do. And I don't know what the reason is for an individual because they're all always different. But I opened today's conversation with this, even though we're going to talk about the week in review, because I've been kind of making notes for myself because I am going to put something on Facebook and I am going to talk about this on Monday and I am going to ask people to write their stories, just like Shelley. I'd like Shelley to get on Facebook and share her story of recovery from things that plagued her in her younger years and brought her to where she is now. If you met Shelley, you would never believe Shelley is the age she is. Nobody thinks Shelley is past the age of 40 when they meet her. I mean, now she's got some gray hair. Yeah, but if you look at her skin, her face, her exuberance, you would never guess that's her age. So all of those things, I want to open up some of those doors for people to think about and to share some of those stories. And the reason I want to do that is I want to give hope to people who are sitting alone. I hear from people that don't have any outside communication. They're on Facebook. Some of them I've known for years. Some of them I met on Facebook. They sit in a room twice a week. Somebody might pick them up and take them grocery shopping. They have no life. They need some hope, and some of them are suffering from things like cancer, diabetes, blood pressure issues, so that they, you know, they're on so much medication that they can't drive anymore. There's lots of issues out there, and I think if we could tell some stories of recovery, what's the way I want to put this? Not total recovery, because I don't ever think that's true. There will always be health issues for everybody just because of heredity and what you've already done to yourself. But the journey to better health, the journey, the hope that you need to have to make that journey, I think it's important to talk about that. So, Shell, will you do that on Facebook? Will you get on Facebook? I know you're not on very much, but it would be an opportunity for you to write, which you're very good at, and share your story so that people will relate. People say, oh, God,
I don't know how other
me.
Are going to – it's I don't use Facebook, so I'll talk to you later, and I'll have to find out where to – I don't know where to post it, where anybody else would see it. I mean, if I just type
everybody,
it on my page.
Everybody, you put it on your Facebook page, and everybody that you're friends with will see it. And then if we all share it, then the friends that you don't have that we do will see it. And it will travel all over. Everything that anybody sends me that's important for other people to see, I just share it. Then it comes up on my page, and then the people that only see my page because they're only friends with me, they're not friends with you, then they'll see it. And it will travel like that. And I'm going to tell after I post something so that it opens up this door, I've a couple friends right now that are recovering from amazing surgeries. I've talked about one of them on the air before, and she's a listener, and I'm hoping she will share. Plus that it's good for you, don't you think? I mean, I know you're finding out that writing your book has been therapeutic for you, right?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But I just want to open that door so that we can do something with that. But we'll get back to the week in review, and I'm going to work on that this weekend. And on that good note, we're all going to try to make it over today to the Institute to support my son Michael, who graduates from the Institute today. 3 weeks of veganism, 8 ounces a wheat grass a day, the whole nine yards, and he's brought himself to a whole new place. Incredibly proud of him, and we're all going to go over to support him at the graduation at the Institute this afternoon. So on Monday we didn't have a show, but Tuesday we brought Monday's show over, and it was the story of Billy Williams, the young boy, the 12-year-old boy who was being picked on because he's skinny and got protruding teeth, and he made his own little video about, you know, what was going on with him. And J.J. Watt from the Houston, Texas NFL team showed up and took him to the YMCA and had him play football with a bunch of other young boys who were kind of disconnected from other stuff. And now he has his own gang. He has his own buddies. He has his football team and friends and people that bring him to the place where he doesn't feel alone or ostracized or, different, which is beautiful. And we also took that opportunity to thank the YMCA for years. I looked up one day how long the YMCA has been around. Do you remember what that date was, Shel? Wasn't it like in the 30s or something?
I don't know that I ever knew the date, but I think it's been around probably that long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very old...
I have to look again today.
Yeah, I mean, it started out as a men's... I don't know when the women's
club
section... Yeah, was... Mm-hmm. Was created. That went back a long time.
But it was also a place where men could find a room to rent real cheap and stuff like that way back in the day in your small towns and stuff like that. So it is a good place, and like I said, I belonged to the YMCA when I was a kid. So that was a great story. And our summary for that was the fact that a lot of times if you're by yourself and you feel like you're really by yourself, like there's nobody you can turn to besides mom and dad, you know, because mom and dad, they love you unconditionally, and you get the feeling when you're 12 that they just don't get it. You know that they love you, but they're not much help in a scenario like this, I'm sorry to say. Just because you, yourself, as a 12-year-old, feel like they don't get it. And so consequently, you don't let them in. But finding peers that get it, that can be your new besties, brings you to a much more powerful level in your own mind, which was the most beautiful part of that story, because now he doesn't feel like he's the geek. He doesn't feel like he's all alone. And Shell and I told the story, in our first year on the show, about the mom who brought in her girlfriends and their daughters and formed a kind of a girls' clique who still now, in their 20s, are doing things together once a month, and mostly charities or hospice care and stuff like that, and they all go together because they all supported each other through those horrific high school and early college days, which was a great story. So, you have anything to add to Tuesday's story, honey?
Well, the only thing is that I had agreed with all of that. I think it's essential to assist kids that seem to be off. If you have a child that seems overly shy or seems to not really be embracing school and things like that, and there's obvious things about them, maybe there's something different. Maybe they are shy, maybe they talk with a lisp, maybe they're gangly, maybe they're too tall, too short, whatever. They might have a scar or something. Is to find people in the public, find people in the media, sports figures, politicians, actors, actresses, somebody maybe they look up to, somebody that you've become aware of, one of the teachers or something that they respect, who had that, who were gangly at their age, who were too tall at their age, and now they're successful adults. And there's so many of these stories, it's very easy to find out who was like that when they were a kid and share those stories with your kid, because if they can look at this successful adult or even somebody just a little older than them, maybe somebody who's in their late teens or early 20s, and they will look and they're really successful and very well liked, but when they were, 10 or 11 or 12, they were gangly and shy and all that, and now here they're this really outgoing person, it lets them know that just because that's who they are at this moment, it doesn't mean they're always going to look or feel that way. And it's important to let kids know that the way they feel about things can be temporary. If they have a scar, they're always going to have the scar, but the way they feel about the scar will be less important as they get older and they get a better self-esteem. So that was the thing I was talking about, and there's so many different stories on the internet where you can share that with kids.
Well, if you think about movies that we've watched in our whole lifetime about the friends people make, the person, the brother, the sister, the cousin, the just next door neighbor. Even in some cases, it's a dog, or a cat who is their confidant, the person that they feel the safest with, the animal that they feel the safest with. But we all need somebody.
I'm looking at what while you're connection. Talking, I was looking up the YMCA.
Yeah, I did too.
Uh-huh. Do you see when it started?
Yeah, 1844.
Wow! And it was originally for the Underground Railroad for the African Americans that were becoming homeless.
Well, the one I found said that it was established in London, England, in 1844 by George Williams, a draper shop assistant, to give young men an alternative to life on the streets. It doesn't, I'm not seeing anything about
United States, areas of it, like this was in 1853, it was established to serve African American 8 years before the Civil War started. Another one was started in Cleveland in the 1870s. The first railroad YMCA was organized in Cleveland as a partnership between the YMCA and the railroad companies to provide wholesome overnight for the railroad workers. So they started popping up as a result. Yeah, it was founded June of 1844 by George William in London and aims to put Christian principles into practice. Yeah, a couple of them talk about the spiritual, the religious connection to Young Men's Christian Association. It's interesting that it goes back that far. My goodness, I did not know that.
Yeah, Well, I didn't either. I thought that we had looked it up before, and it was like in the 20s or 30s, but it could have been just what we were talking about, something with the YMCA, a particular reason that I looked it up, but those were the years that I remembered, yeah. I see that on here with in the railways and things like that. It says 1904, Springfield YMCA Railroad associations popped up nationwide, and that says 1904 on this particular history. But, yeah, so it's been around forever, and I think that it's too bad that there isn't. Let me read this real quick because it's nice. Since 1852, the YMCA of Greater Springfield has been a way of life for thousands of youth, teens, families, and seniors throughout our region. As one association, we are working together to meet the growing needs of the 14 cities and towns that we serve. Help us provide opportunities for youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility to more members in our community by making a donation. This is a plead for money, but I still like what they say, and I think it is important, and there are lots of those things. As we know, we've even there for a while. I had them all on my Facebook page, all the different numbers we could call to get that kind of support. I don't think YMCA today is all that. I want to choose my words carefully here. I think that they still exist in most towns, but I don't think they are. I think mostly now elderly people rent the rooms and use them for, there's usually a game room and a pool and stuff like that there.
I always thought of the...
I'll have to find out.
Yeah, I always thought of the YMCA or the YWCA as athletic. Like mm-hmm. a place where people go play basketball and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was always mm-hmm. like an athletic, because I guess the one near where I lived had, like, athletic programs, because I almost joined it. I didn't, but I was almost going to go. They had, like, after-school stuff going on there. So mm-hmm. I never realized that it had other services and other functions. I always thought it was like an after-school thing for kids that didn't have any place else to go, that they could go there for recreation. Growing up, that was my understanding of what it was. And it's interesting that once I became an adult, and even now, I'm still learning things about what the organization was really all about, because I had a totally different concept of it when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, it is interesting, and anything that serves in any way, as far as I'm concerned, is wonderful. You know what, though? I kind of remembered there used to be, and I don't see it here anywhere, on the one that I got into, I thought it was youth, men, I don't remember what the YMCA stands for. Do you? Do you see it on the thing that you brought up?
I thought that one of them did say it. I thought that, what does YMCA stand for? Let's see. Young men. Yeah, I didn't remember the C standing for Christian, because I didn't remember it being religious based, but it's Young mm-hmm. Men's Christian Association, and the YWMT is Men's Christian Association. So that's mm-hmm. why, to me, it always had to do with young people, and why I went to the athleticism, I guess, was just because the few friends of mine that were going would go to play basketball, and they wanted yep. me to go with them at the time. So to me, it always was like an athletic after-school thing. I didn't know there was other mm-hmm. programs. But it's called the Young Men's Christian Association, and the YW would be Young Women's Christian Association.
Yeah. Well, back in those days, I imagine it was difficult to have any kind of an organization that invited children to it that didn't have a Christian background. That's
yeah.
just another side note. So,
stating that it was started in 1844 in London, and that the YWCA, the women's chapter, was started 11 years later in 1855. So they're both in the mid 1800s, and then it took about 60 years to make it over here to the U.S. Really, as far as recognize, because it looks like the first time it hit the U.S. was in response to either railroad workers or the railroad, you know, helping African Americans that were trying to escape slavery. And it was a combination of the railroad workers themselves and, I guess, the African Americans who saw what was going on and were using it. At least that's kind of what I'm getting from these two different articles here. But that this always happens. We research things on the show. We find out that, you know, people's perception of a thing today is so shallow compared to the rich history that a lot of things that we take for granted today went through to get where they are today.
Well, and it was a time of survival, you know. When you see some of the old, like Gangs of New York and some of those kind of movies that have, I'm sure, lots of things that are not, you know, that are dramatized for the sake of the movie, but a lot of them are based on true facts. And having spent time in New York City, walking through Chinatown and Manhattan and Little Italy and with all of us girls, you can see the heritage there. You can see heritage in small town USA, you know, like if you go to, like here in St. Augustine, or there's a couple little towns here in Florida that I just think are, they look like they're frozen in time, so to speak. But
I love, very quaint.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, you drive into town and there's the big gazebo and all that kind of stuff, you know, like years and years ago, and it is beautiful. It was tough back in those days, really tough. And the luxuries that were afforded to the few today are more commonplace for the general population. Now, real quick, because I want to get off this subject so that we can move on the rest of the week, but according to the one I brought up, just for the sake of argument, it says 1844, London, England, 1852, for the third oldest YMCA founded in Montreal, and 1852 for the fourth oldest YMCA founded in Springfield. So, you know, I just thought that was amusing that we've got such a difference in dates. You know, that's like 8 years differences compared to what you found on yours. So, like we say all the time, people, if you look things up on the internet, you should look them in several different places, and then, you know, make a conscious decision on which one you believe, I guess. So these are supposed to be factual, but they're often
right. Look at the address of the website. Is it a blogger that just created that? Because when you get these hits, you're just getting a hit of something that matches the keyword. You know. Look at the source of the information and compare them. You know, if one is just some blogger dude sitting in his chair, and the other one is a history professor at Cornell, you know, and then you can start discerning who's probably got the more higher integrity to their information.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one I found is sponsored by the YMCA in Springfield. And
perfect.
So anyway, let's... that is interesting. Wednesday, we talked about personal injury lawsuits. I shared my story about what happened, and I was amused the day that I posted it on Facebook, and it disappeared within seconds. That very day, I got a call from the organization that is supposed to be overseeing any injuries for the insurance company that manages Target. And I was offered a $200 gift card for all my pain and suffering, etc. So I have decided to move forward with this mostly because I'm angry about my treatment. I'm pretty much a pushover if somebody is nice to me. And I'm not one of those kind of people who thinks everything that happens to me, somebody else should pay for. But I'm annoyed and a little bit, I don't know, concerned about the old ladies that I and the old men that I see walking around in those places now, and how many times they get hurt and nobody does a damn thing for them. So we did talk about that at length, and I will keep you all posted on that. I want to move to Thursday because there's more news about Ebola, and it's not good. This morning, again, on the Today Show, the doctor that's on the show on a regular basis, she her name is Nancy Snyderman, Dr. Nancy Snyderman. Do you watch Today or you watch Good Morning America show?
Today.
So do you know who Nancy Snyderman is? She's on there with a lawyer and sometimes with Star, what's her name, and they ask them medical questions, legal questions, stuff like that, and they're sounding board, the team
watch
from
the
Today
show.
Show.
I watch pieces of it, so I'm not sure who she is.
Well, she is in Liberia, and she was with the gentleman that is here in the States now. And now there has been a second cameraman who has started running a temperature, and he has been tested, and Dr. Snyderman was with him. And they show pictures of her in the full, you know, protection garb and everything, and being, you know, sprayed down even with the gloves on and everything. But she was with him, and he started running a temperature. They never touch. She said, we never hug. We never touch each other. We're very, very careful over here. So she doesn't feel as though, at least her demeanor was one of, I'll be fine because I've taken all the precautions. But now we have another young man who's from here, and he's being sent back here. So it's a mess. It's truly, truly a mess. And very sadly, some of the things that we're finding on the internet, of course, are organized to scare people. I don't want to do that. I do want to make people aware, though, if you're not watching it because you think it won't have anything to do with you. Again, Shelley and I can't stress enough about when you're traveling on airplanes, when you're in restrooms, in very, very public places, you must be careful because it's getting out of hand now between the MRSA, this. I know the one that scared the hell out of me was the flesh-eating disease. I thought to myself, oh, my God, I can't imagine how you would deal with that. If you got it or someone you loved got something like awful. So it is serious and it is scary. And I think everybody should be paying attention to that. And there are some little things.
About the fact they said that it was carried by the fruit bat, and you said you'd never heard that classification. When I said where are fruit bats found, I had Googled this the other day when we were talking, and it's in Africa, Australia, Europe, and Asia. So it isn't an animal that is native to the U.S. or Canada or Mexico. It is in the other hemisphere of the Earth. What surprised me is that they're also found in Europe. Now, you know, because we've traveled to Germany and France, I would have to find out where in Europe. I mean, Europe is a huge continent, you know.
Right.
And is a dozen different countries. I don't know if it's in all European countries or just in certain areas of Europe, that because there are certain areas of Europe that are very, very close to Africa, you know. So I'm wondering if it's just those states that border or if it's in all of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that interesting.
Well,
but it was but not the U.S. The U.S., Canada, Mexico were not mentioned.
Well, why do you suppose that is? Just out of curiosity. Let's just speculate a little bit because we don't have any clear facts that we're being given.
Well, they probably can't make the trip over here. It's just, you know, they can fly from one continent to the next. Africa and Europe and Australia, they're all very near each other. To get over to the U.S. continent, you know, to North America, would probably be just too far for them to migrate. The only way they would migrate here is if they got on a ship or a plane, I would think. The fruit bats probably, you know, they just probably can't migrate that far. But to go from Africa to Europe, you know, you're talking bordering continents. It's not that far. There's areas that almost touch each other when you look at the map of Europe and Africa. So that's probably why there's easy migration of the animal in those continents, and why they haven't made it over to North America.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, now the issue is not the fruit bat. Now the issue is human beings.
Right, and now the human being is the barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, there's a big story now on the internet. She came up on my Facebook page just as a side note, and there's a story about the freelance cameraman and a picture of Nancy Snyderman, and we have thermometers on us at all times. We're required not to shake hands. We wash our hands and feet with bleach.
I think bleach is ridiculous. Peroxide or anything else would be safer. I think bleach is ridiculous to tell somebody this. To what they're so toxic
maybe part of that usage, honey, has to do with the fact that they're in that part of the world. I don't know. I'm just kind of surmising that they're working with what they have over there. Maybe, of course, peroxide is a disinfectant, and we've talked about this before on some of the health shows. You can even take blood out of material with peroxide, so it has a bleaching effect in itself, but it's not as unkind to your body as alcohol or bleach.
Right.
So,
peroxide can cause burns.
It may
burn.
Just be all that's available. Okay, heck yeah. I think I talked about one time on one of the health shows that I got bleach poisoning from being so ridiculous about making sure that the cloth that I wiped on the tables in the restaurant were white. And I would soak them in so much bleach and hot water that it got through my my skin tissue, my epidermis, and got into my bloodstream. And
yep.
I was a mess. I had almost like a scabies. You know, the itchy,
yep.
burny stuff that you can get, or like shingles gets all over me. And,
well, chlorine also creates environmental hazards, water pollution. Peroxide doesn't. Peroxide, for some reason, and I don't know the scientific reason for it, but peroxide is biodegradable, basically, for lack of a scientific way of doing it, and chlorine is not. So chlorine bleach is actually an environmental hazard where peroxide isn't. And yet peroxide is just as effective as killing bacteria. So I use all non-chlorine bleach or peroxide-based cleaning products for disinfecting and things like that, and they're very effective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it always surprises me when people actually put it right on their skin because it's so toxic.
mm-hmm.
But
well,
at any rate,
like I say, in that part of the world, that might have to do with just that's what's available. So...
Right.
That's what's going on over there, and I think that it's kind of scary, though, you know, when you have a personality that you see all the time, and this will cause a lot of controversy because it's one thing when a family of somebody is alerted to this. It's when a public figure, I know it's a sad thing to say, but this will finally get the attention of everybody because now if she is under any kind of danger, this will really get the attention of everybody. And maybe that's a good thing, and maybe that's why she did it. But I want to send some good energy out there towards everybody that's trying to make a difference because bacteria and germs don't need a passport, everybody. They don't need a passport. They can get here. So we have to be careful, and I hope everybody's paying attention to this, and I hope everybody is giving it the kind of credence it deserves. So, we also this week had a moment of silence for a family where all the children of two parents and their granddaughter were taken away from them in one accident. And the reason I know things like this happen all the time, but this was given to me by somebody who listens to our show all the time and has been on our show. And she's a nurse, and she has a great empathy for people. I know her because she was one of the biggest supporters. I've never met her face-to-face, but she was one of the biggest supporters of my grandson when he was hurt. So I want to mention again today, because in the days to come, these are some of the worst days. After the initial shock of what happened and everybody trying to move on with their lives, having that many people taken away from you, from one family, in one swoop, I can't even fathom the feelings or the emotions that are going on in that family. The lady, Pam Beck, is a somebody who helps, works with like an agent, I guess, for Full Force, a band that, you know, is pretty well known if you are into that kind of music. And our hearts go out to them again as well. I believe most of the arrangements have already taken place throughout this past week. So, but now the rough time comes, because now the attempt to get by without those people in your midst is the hardest part. So our hearts go out to them. And I hope, Donna, if you're listening, I know you sometimes are at work now and listen later. I hope you know that we're thinking about you and love you and appreciate all the input that you give to Renee's Heart to Heart and all the wonderful things and the support that you did for my grandson in his time of need. So people like you are very special, and we want to make sure that you know that we care about you and the people that you love as well. So I want to talk quickly, though, about next week. And, Shell, I can't wait to tell you about this, because I think you may have some input on this. Did you know that there okay. are people, did you know that there are military people that are doing, like, making money by getting married or marrying other people to get them green cards and things like that, and it's become a business? It's called
wow.
military wife shopping. I mean, there was a little bit on it the other night on TV, and I made a note to myself to research it, and I've done a little bit of that. But apparently, it's become big business, and some of these these people are being arrested and charged with some kind of fraud.
It's been like when you buy a wife, that's been a business forever. I mean, where you could buy, a woman from Russia or a woman from China or whatever,
right.
and these men would get these women and pay and then bring them over here and marry them and stuff. I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
No. This is strictly in the military, according to the report that I saw. And like I said, I'm gonna look into it this weekend, so that we can do a story on it. But I just thought, there's always, where there's a will, there's a way to make money. But the bad part about it is that you have to wonder, who's getting hurt here? Who's getting hurt here? Because somebody must be getting hurt. And, of course, it's a matter of having the funds, too, to make it happen.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
one of the things
I
wanted to back on what we just talked about, ending up with the talking about with the Ebola breakout and all that, is that you had read something from the internet, and like we explained to everybody, it was the five lies the government's putting out there, and it was, we don't know the accuracy of the information. Some of it sounded plausible. Some of it sounded believable. But one of the things that was said, regardless of whether anything else that was said was correct or not, one of the things that was said on there is that the government was saying the only thing that can help is getting a vaccine or blah, blah, blah. And I've seen firsthand myself that boosting the immune system is the best thing you can do. So if you really are concerned, take the proper precautions. Make sure you carry hand sanitizer with you. Make sure you're eating better. If you're going into an air, especially if you're traveling on an airplane or you're traveling in an airport, be very careful. Just be self-aware. Don't get crazy. Don't get panicky, because when you get like that, that's actually, fear actually weakens the immune system. So don't get nuts about this. Be aware that it's out there and take all the necessary precautions. If you're careful, if you do all the right things, you've minimized your opportunity of being exposed to it quite severely, and you have a much better chance of never being exposed to it at all. You know, but if you are, like I said, there are people that have been exposed to deadly communicable diseases and survived because their immune system was stronger. I talked about Edmund Bartoszeke and Mother Teresa, and there's other people that went into highly contagious camps for people that were isolated from the rest of the population and never got sick because their immune systems were so strong and they had such a good attitude. They weren't fearful of these people. You know, they knew that they had a good, high-integrity system. So don't be reckless, but in the same token, don't get crazy about it and panicky, because that emotion can actually reduce your immune system. So just be smart about your choices. And be self-aware. Being self-aware is more of a protection than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with all of that. I do want to mention something that I started to talk about, and now that you're bringing it up again, it refreshes my old memory. the kits that we used to put together. One of the most important things that a lot of people may not even know, but I'm going to put it out there. The hairs in your nose catch, one of the reasons you have hairs in your nose is to protect your sinuses when you're breathing in, and they pick up a great deal of bacteria. So one of the best things you can do for yourself, and this is just based on what I saw, learned, and know about, colloidal silver, which has been around for many, many, many years. It's one of the first natural kind of like antibiotics or what's a better word for it, Shelley? It's not really an antibiotic. I don't want people thinking it's that kind of a medicine. But it comes in a bottle that you can use like a nose sniffer, like when you use like all the
it's
different things that help you with. Yes. And
it has antibiotic properties. It's not a pharmaceutical.
Right.
It has antibiotic properties, antifungal, antiviral, and antifungal. So it actually has four different properties depending on whether or not you're taking it internally or you're spraying it on your body. But it's antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, and I said something else. There's four things. But it has four different anti-properties depending on what you're suffering with. So it's really one of those, like, miracle supplements, because it is a supplement, because you can take it internally.
Right.
Really boosts the immune system. You can also use it as a topical spray. I cut my eye once, and I actually sprayed my eyeball with it, and it healed in, like, 3 hours. I was stunned, because I really was a bad cut. And I've cut my eye. I'm the only person I know that's cut my corneas like 10 times. Most people I speak to have never, ever cut their eyes once, but I've really injured my corneas many, many times. I went to an eye doctor recently, and he couldn't believe how much scar tissue I had on my eyes. But I used all the other times that I cut it, and I went to the regular optometrist, and they gave me like prescription and all, you know, prescription antibiotics. This is before I stopped taking them. It would take me a week or two for my eye to heal. I used colloidal silver, and in under 24 hours, my eye was completely healed. I was shocked.
Well, this spray in your nose to keep your nose kind of disinfected is a godsend. And it's also not incredibly expensive. So my input is for all of you to check that out and keep some of that handy. We are out of time, though. I want to wish everybody a great, great weekend. God bless, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks, Shell. See you
this
afternoon.
Yeah, I'll see you in a little bit. Okay,
all right, bye-bye.
Everyone have a wonderful weekend.